Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Oh, didn't see you guys there. Hey, it's Super it's Nintendo Voice Chat, episode 646, and I blew the opening. I am your host and chief Super Nintendo, Seth Macy. I am joined here. No. Just roll with it. We're gonna keep that in. It's gonna be one of those patented goofs that we didn't plan. I am joined today from the studio in San Francisco, California, industry legend Cat Bailey.
I always read Ultimate Unauthorized Nintendo Game Strategies rather than How to Win at Nintendo Games. That was my choice, or else Nintendo Power.
That is a deep cut. Jeff Roven, though. Legend. Woman of the day, that is to say the birthday, Rev Valentine, happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Seth. I personally had exactly two copies of Nintendo Power Advance that I bought at a store, and I read them over and over and over and over again, the same ones.
That's how they were designed to be used, over and over and over
What's
again.
What's Nintendo Power Advance?
It was Nintendo Power, but it was specifically for Game Boy Advance games, and they included guides for like four different games. The ones I had included like Mario Kart Super Circuit, Golden Sun, Breath of Fire.
Of course.
Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone inexplicably, like the Game Boy Advance one. And then, oh, there's one more that was like a very formative game, and I don't remember. Oh, and Wario Land 4, which we were literally just talking about before we started this podcast. There were some other games in there too, but the Advance Wars was in there too. I didn't read that one as much because I haven't played Advance Wars, but.
Well, nobody gets to play the new one for an infinite amount of time, as far as you know. Also joining us live from the studio in sunny Los Angeles, California, Jeffrey Vega.
Hello, hello. I'm so excited to be here, be back in the studio. And I got every single player's guide for every Pokemon game because I love that. Every single player's guide had the entire Pokedex. So that's how I would kind of build my team for the Elite Four. And I would read that more than any textbook in school.
Yeah, because school sucks. We can all agree on that.
NBC hates school.
Hate school. Kids drop out.
Oh my God.
I'm just kidding. School isn't important, mostly. But Jeffrey, what if I told you I'm looking right now at the official Pokemon Gold and Silver Adventure Guide from... Oh, that might actually be... hold on.
Oh, wow. For the readers at home, Seth has jumped up on his desk to find a... Player's Guide on the Shelf.
I had that.
That's beautiful.
Jeffrey, I got news for you. I have no attachment to Pokemon Gold and Silver, so if you want this guide, I'll just put it in the mail for you.
You have no attachment of the best RPGs of all time? All right.
I was what year did these come out? I was probably like 37. So,
What? Hey, Pokemon is timeless. And also, you should give that guy to Raymond or Jeffrey, and they can fight over it, and one of them will give a good home.
I'm going to do a King Solomon right now. I'm going to tear it in half.
No. Don't even joke.
Well, it's gold and silver. Is there like a silver half and a gold half? That's not how it works.
Well, that's the biblical references portion of our show. But Jeffrey, we all hate you because you went to Super Nintendo World. We don't really.
I did.
It's okay. I hate you, Jeffrey.
I hate you a little.
Sorry.
And this is breaking news. We're a house divided here. I went to Super Nintendo World at the Universal Studios Hollywood, and it was a blast. And I want you guys to come with me.
Yes,
there's a picture of Ben in there. I love it. It was a really cool. And you know, the park itself isn't like huge news because it already exists in Japan, and the one in LA is a bit smaller. It only will have the one ride, which is Mario Kart Bowser's Challenge. But it was truly a dream. I mean, I was at a Nintendo theme park, which I've never been in my entire life, which is surreal. I want to hold on that picture of Ben and just stay there the whole time. It is so cool, and it's very there he is, there's Ben. Well, even for the rest of the show we'll have that up. It was very cool. It's very small. I think that's everyone will say that, just because it's tiny little corner. It's just
like
kind
like the warehouse level in Tony Hawk.
One ride, really.
In Japan they have the Yoshi kind of slow dark ride, and then I know they're planning Donkey Kong, but right now Universal said that they're just planning a Mario Kart Bowser Challenge, which is up and running. I did the ride, and I really enjoyed it, but I thought it was a little chaotic because for people who don't know the ride, it's an AR experience. You're in a Mario Kart and you are wearing a Mario hat headset with AR capabilities. You're going through this dark ride and you're seeing all these real life set pieces in the ride. Like, I'm seeing giant piranha plants. I'm seeing like very big, castle. Like, you're going through a really cool ride, but you have this giant visor in front of you that's showing all the other Mario Kart characters. You're actually racing Bowser and all of his children, you know, Roy, Ludwig, the whole bunch.
Of course.
And the whole goal of the ride is to kind of shoot with your steering wheel, and you just have shells, which thankfully in Mario Kart you have one or three shells. In this game I got like 27 to start.
And you get
very, very random number, but you kind of go through the item shop. So you're aiming with your actual, your neck, your head, you're using, and you're hitting it with where you're looking. And so I was very disoriented in the ride. And I love theme park rides, and I do them a lot. So I was pretty surprised at how kind of conflicted I was on the ride, because I was like, I want to do it again and see all the things I didn't see. And there's like a high score thing. You know, it's very, very gamified. I mean, kids are going to lose their minds at this, because you're just in Mario Kart in real life. But I will say my favorite thing about the park was hands down the food. Oh, my God.
Really?
It was. And again, look, theme park food, I get it.
Sometimes, not great.
Yeah, it's like it's a low bar. Oh, yes. This picture that we're showing on screen right now is the... This is the most expensive. It's not even on the menu yet because it was only in early access. It's the chef's.
Oh my God.
Early access food?
Early access food?
Did you use your American Express Black card to order off the menu there?
Yeah, I had to I had to pre-order this meal on the eShop before I went to the park. this is a short rib on top of a mashed potato with like a kind of a drizzle. Those are sour cream patches. It was heavenly. It's not currently on the menu yet, but they were still kind of perfecting it. And there's like a little cookie with Chef Toad kind of printed on it.
Aww.
And it was so good. I mean, it's you know, it's beef. This is so everything here is kind of like the main thing. So in the front here, you have the toadstool garlic cheesy knots. You have two main burger items. There's the Mario burger and the Luigi burger. The Mario burger is beef, kind of traditional with mushrooms, barf. We'll get to that later. And then Luigi is a chicken burger. So it's just chicken with a giant green bell pepper.
It's because he's a chicken. He's a coward.
She figured that out. Reb cracked the code.
I did it.
Yep.
Yeah. Luigi did request a chicken breast for his personality. And there's a little pesto sauce. The desserts in the back. I've actually ranked them all, if you guys will have me.
Yes, please.
Yes. Oh, my gosh, because, please.
Yeah, because I know, you know, theme parks are a luxury, and I want to make sure that you get the best thing at Super Nintendo World.
That's so super advocacy, so I appreciate it.
Of course. So I categorize everything into three sections. So there's the starters and salads, there's the main course menu, and there's desserts, which there's like three meals per category. So not a lot to choose from, but that's good for us. I'm going to start here with the, this is perfect timing here, the toadstool cheesy garlic knots. This is, I'm going to start with worst to best. Guys, unfortunately, this is bad.
Yeah. How do you get garlic and cheese and bread wrong? There's nothing wrong with any of those three things.
No. I first want to thank Universal Studios for having us and having the chef specifically bring these out stylized so that we could film it. That's why I was even more shocked at how bad they were, because they were very stale. They were like, I bit into it and it's like you're like pulling your head back to rip it open. And I'm like, what? This is meaningless carbs. But they're shaped like Toad's head, and I feel like, you know, it's worth being on the list.
Are they? I mean, they're round and Toad's head is round, so I guess that's
bingo.
True.
I did not see this. Yeah.
Like in that sense, a basketball is shaped like Toad's head. So I don't know.
It's kind of hard to see, but in the image, the garlic knots do have kind of a base. So they are kind of like, I would say maybe they're probably closer to the Mario mushroom like power up versus Toad's head. There's four totals, so that's number four. Number three on my list is the piranha plant caprese salad, which it's very cool. It's shaped like a piranha plant. It's giant, two giant tomatoes, but it's very minimal. It's just a tiny little salad side as a main meal. Don't really recommend
it. I love the presentation.
Yeah, that's very cute.
The presentation, yeah. The plating, yeah, is actually
It's
amazing.
Very cute, but it tastes exactly how that looks. Just pretty, you know, in the words of Ron Swanson in Parks and Rec, I'm not a rabbit. This is a very...
Yeah, but look, you got the fresh mozz right there.
Yeah, I would eat the mozzarella and tomato with a little strip of what looks like basil, and then I would walk away.
Those radishes are clearly sliced on a mandolin, so oh my god. I guess we have different perspectives when it comes to vegetables.
That's fair. Maybe I was secretly spooked from the piranha plant. I didn't want to get, you know,
Be scary.
I mean, they do just jump right out of the pipes at you. So.
And then I would say the next is the Superstar Chicken Salad. Very fun, very kind of basic, you know, just a regular salad. Has some Superstar croutons. Very kind of like, this is like kind of like, you know, what you're... you know, your grandma's going to get, you know, when you go to Super Nintendo World with your grandma.
Yep.
Very, yes.
Normal. And then I would say the best starter salad. Oh, yeah, there it is. Very fun.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
I like
yeah.
Those croutons.
Yeah, it's really good. Little star croutons. I did ask the chef if when you eat the star, do you turn invincible? And she said no.
Oh.
but it's healthy.
If you eat your vegetables, you'll become invincible. Kids.
That is yeah, true.
Go to
yes.
school,
drop out
eat
of school,
your vegetables, kids.
And eat your vegetables.
We do not all, go to school good, on this podcast. Yeah,
vitamins.
And then I would say number one, starter salad. If you have to get any of them, get Yoshi's favorite fruit and veggie salad.
Ooh,
look at okay. this oh, salad.
Man. I'm into that.
I'm very excited yeah, about these greens.
And don't worry, this is vegetarian. Those Yoshi eggs are croutons.
All right.
Yeah,
okay, so
they're
vegetarian,
very
but it's
good.
Not,
it's like some food
safe.
Coloring on those croutons or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Yoshi,
it's
Yoshi
really
understands food.
Yeah.
You know, in Yoshi's story, you're filling the whole screen with fruits everywhere, and all those fruits are in the salad. We got blueberries, we got strawberries, we got, you know, pineapple. It's great. It was very refreshing, very good. Salads are great. Yeah, it's very good. Okay, so I'm going to move on to our main menu. We have three options in the main
Let's
menu. So here are my top three foods that you can get at Super Nintendo World Toadstool Cafe. Number three, starting with Fire Flower Spaghetti and Meatballs.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is a spaghetti with mushroom marinara sauce, meatballs, fire flour, Parmesan crisp, shaved Parmesan, and chopped parsley. The chef did warn that it would be very spicy, and it was not spicy at all. I would say that's fine. It does have a tiny bit of a kick, but I think it's very accessible for people who maybe don't like spice.
You need to power that up, Nintendo.
Seriously.
Yeah.
We need to be shooting fireballs by the end of this.
Yep. Those meatballs are shaped like Toad's head.
Oh, are they?
Oh, hell yeah.
That's more than fair. Yeah, I did. I also, when I took a bite of the meatball, my clothes inverted in color, which I thought was
That's very cool.
It was pretty cool. It kind of ruined the continuity of the video we were shooting there, but, you know, I'd say it's worth it. Number two on my list is the Mario Burger. That's bacon, mushroom, and cheese, beef patty, American cheese, kind of your classic brioche bun. The fun thing about this burger is that they print a Mario mustache on top of it.
Yeah.
And for all you fans out there of taking the perfect selfie, when you bite into the burger, it looks like you have a Mario mustache.
So fun.
Oh, that's cute. I like the little hat. It's wearing a little hat.
Is the hat edible?
The hat is not edible. It is a toy. So kids, stay in school, eat salad, and don't swallow tiny toys by accident.
Okay. Well, my other question is, does it cry out in pain when you bite into it?
I was worried that this was burger was secretly like a Cappy character, and I didn't want it. Yeah.
Right.
But yes, the Mario hat is on a stick that kind of keeps the burger together, and you can take it home. It's a fun little thing. The number one best meal at Toadstool Cafe is the Luigi burger. That's
really?
Right. My man Luigi is in the spotlight. It is not a burger with beef, though. It's a pesto grilled chicken.
Oh. Yeah.
It's very good. Can't recommend this enough if you go. It's a giant green bell pepper, which, I mean, come on. Bell peppers are great. The pesto sauce. Also the french fries. Very good. You know, it's hard to mess up french fries. Happy to report that the french fries at Toastal Cafe.
Oh, you can mess
you
up
can
french fries.
Absolutely mess up french fries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I guess I'm glad that they're good. Yeah.
I am too, because a bad french fry really just throws off my whole vibe.
Yeah, that's true.
My day is
ruined. This feels like maybe we need to do another episode on just french fries.
School cafeteria french fries.
Food criticism
again. School sucks.
Happen.
This is why Seth is anti-school.
and just to kind of all those meals were like $17, just to kind of for context of like how much you know a park food is kind of expensive. And then I would say also the honorable mention on the main menu, which is not available until the park opens, is the Chef Toad special short rib. If you get anything, get that. But if not, the burger, Luigi, highly recommend. And finally on the menu, we have the desserts, which, boy, oh boy, it's so good that I have to put on my Yoshi headband.
Oh
here.
Oh, my God.
Official Yoshi headband.
Sort of Universal Studios' answer to Mickey ears. And
I think it's better. There.
Yeah.
So do you have a lot of choices, or is it just Yoshi?
Yeah, you actually can get Mario, Luigi, Yoshi, and Toad. And they are very comfortable. And I think they're like $15 or $20. And just Yoshi on your head, which is so great.
I'm kind of surprised they didn't do just like a mushroom cap, like Toad, like put a Toad head on. Oh, but then yeah. I guess that would be accidentally, inadvertently weighing in on the debate as to whether Toad's mushroom is a head or a hat.
That's
is this
true.
A debate? They is did, this discourse?
It has been discourse, yeah.
It's absolutely a head.
I think it might be settled at this point, but okay. For a while it was in contention.
Yeah, they also have in addition to these, they also have mushrooms, like red and green ones that look like Mickey ears, but they are two mushrooms.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, highly recommend. The merch is great. So here are my favorite desserts. I'm going to start with my least favorite one, although they're all very good. I just want to rank them here. Princess Peach cupcake. These desserts are $10, and my God, this cupcake was
beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Pink.
However, that frosting will send anyone into a coma. It is very, very sweet. Princess Peach has outdone herself as per usual. Inside the cupcake is a funfetti kind of cake base. And then the frosting, again, should not be consumed more than one or two bites. It's very sweet.
I think we can all agree she's our princess queen.
Oh, that's true.
100%. Queen Peach. number two was the meat for dessert.
What's
meat pie?
I mean, that would fit with the rest of the menu.
It's true. Yeah.
Is the Mount Beanpole cake, which is a very funny name. It's just a Italian cookie cake with mousse, and it had chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry in between to make it look like the kind of green world
of
Mario.
I see.
I was struggling to envision this, and now I see. Yeah. Okay.
I'm actually really into this dessert. This looks great.
Yeah, it looks like it looks almost like if you're listening, if you can imagine like what a tiramisu cake looks like, but the top is green, because it's got the little flag and the guy.
The guy.
What are the layers there, Jeffrey?
So you got the green frosting on top for the grass, and then inside it it's white, pink, and brown for vanilla, strawberry, and chocolate. And it was heavenly. It was so good. Little star cookie, not a cookie, a little white chocolate kind of garnish, and then a little Mario flag that you jump at the end of the level that you can take home.
Cool. You get 5,000 points.
And it's so delicious, and I'm looking at it, and I ate the photograph.
Went to the Walgreens, printed it out.
And then the best dessert at Super Nintendo World Toad Soul Cafe is, very appropriately, the question block tiramisu. Yeah, the question block tiramisu. It's a tiramisu flavored mystery block with a white chocolate power up inside, and guys, get this, you're gonna love it. What the little white chocolate of the item is random every time you order it.
Because it's a question block.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in the
picture we have a power up mushroom, but they mentioned that you could get a one up. There were so many different ones, and they gave us the kind of probably the default one, but.
That's so cool.
All these sides of the question block are cookies, Seth. I don't know how to.
Oh my God!
You need to come to LA.
I know this. I have been begging and scheming and trying to get my way out there. I want to give you a shout out for ordering this rare, because I can see the juices there.
Yeah, it was sort of. I was a little worried because I tried to lift it up and punch it, and I do not recommend that. It makes a big mess. But it's very good. The cookies are soft. Super Nintendo World, the food was the best, which is so fun because food is so fun. Food is great. I highly recommend it. And park food can be kind of whatever. And Toad Soul Cafe is 100% the best part of Super Nintendo World.
Ben approves.
Why do we record on VC right before lunch?
I know.
I already had lunch, and I'm so hungry.
So this is where I admit that I'm a vegetarian. I'm sorry. And I look at that menu. I'm like, well, it looks delicious, but maybe I'll only have dessert.
It is kind of shocking they don't have just a mushroom burger.
It's a mushroom burger.
There. Like, I assumed at least one of the burgers would be a mushroom burger. That's like kind of that's keeping with the theme. But yeah.
Did it have cocktails? Because the Star Wars Cantina had some very overpriced but killer cocktails.
So
not because
unfortunately, they don't have alcohol, but they had one specialty drink in there, and it was a kind of a lemon soda, very Princess Peach themed, and it had like little like it wasn't boba, it was just kind of like the more kind of like easier like burst of liquid, and
I see
it was delicious, and they have the souvenir cups where you can have a straw into a giant one up mushroom and refill that way. But no alcohol, weirdly enough. So
I could see them not wanting a bunch of drunk adults wandering around
into the Mario ride.
Feel like that just sort of kills
yelling,
the Nintendo
get wrecked
vibes
with the blue shell.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoy having several drinks with friends and screaming in Mario Kart for a while.
Chuck E. Cheese has a 2-drink maximum, so that is true. They serve beer. I only know this because I went to the Chuck E. Cheese in Maine and somebody was complaining at 10:30 in the morning at their child's birthday party that they can only drink 2 beers. But
they have to have beer at Chuck E. Cheese. Otherwise, no adult would take their child there.
My takeaway is that they hired a really good pastry chef. And that's where they put most of the resources.
Yeah,
and
I think you're right.
Honestly, that's the right call. Because when I think of Nintendo, I think of sweet things. Or like Mario, at least. So.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, and when you're a little kid, you're like, I don't want to eat anything that's not dessert. This looks gross. Why is there black spots on this fry? Well, because it's peppered, Johnny.
Okay, that had me very worried there for you, Seth, for a moment.
They were seasoned fries.
It's
children
fine.
Don't like
totally
things
innocent.
That...
Is this going back to the you can't make a bad fry, or am I missing it?
No.
Fry discourse.
Yes.
Just imagining Seth with moldy fry chat. Fries. I don't know. I don't know what the man does.
No, I will say this, though. When I was a child and my mom would cook frozen fries in the oven, one of my favorite things to do was to beg her for one of them before they were cooked and then just run out into the living room and eat a frozen fry? Yes.
You.
My brother and I would just beg her, give us a frozen French fry.
That's fine. I used to eat Eggo waffles frozen out of the freezer, so that's fine.
That's
how'd you not break
too.
Your teeth?
They're not that hard. Like they're chewy.
Okay. Freezer burn.
I'm imagining Reb just like taking a bite out of a waffle and your teeth turn into piano keys like a cartoon.
That is exactly what happened to me, yes. Rest in peace, my teeth. That.
Well, Jeffrey, thank you for sharing your food rankings of the Super Nintendo World. I, for one, am very excited to go to Super Nintendo World eventually and not get to eat anything because I do have that gluten thing. So, but I mean, I could just eat
the salad.
There were a lot of gluten-free and vegetarian options.
Oh, really?
Some of those things were gluten-free. I should have called out, like, the piranha plant obviously was gluten-free, but... actually, that might be the only thing.
Order one of the salads, Seth, and give me all your croutons. I'll eat the croutons.
Yeah, those salads look like really good. Like I would eat that for lunch normally. Mm. So I'm pretty excited. Basically, after this, I'm just flying to LA so I can have lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Like the jet-setting host of NBC that I am. But
I'll pick you up from LAX.
Thank you. And then 5 hours later, we'll get to...
Wow, Jeffrey, you're a good friend. Volunteering to pick somebody up from LAX intentionally.
From LAX. Most horrifying. One of the most horrifying airports in the world. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just loop around until Seth is here.
I'll be right there in my shirt, in my kicking slider shirt.
Kicking slider.
All right. Thank you, Jeffrey, for talking us through food when we're all very, very hungry. But now this is something that the fans have been hungry for, and that was a segue. Because it is the triumphant return of the cat take. People have been demanding, where is our cat take? We want a cat take. Well, I've got a treat for you folks. This is the kind of treat you wouldn't even get at Super Nintendo World. Cat, please take it away.
This is something I've been thinking about watching actually The Last of Us on HBO, but also talking about Super Nintendo World. So back in 2006, Nintendo introduced us to the concept of the Blue Ocean. And the idea was that traditional gamers represented a finite audience, so Nintendo needed to strike out into the proverbial open water with the Nintendo Wii. In 2023, the Blue Ocean could mean something much different. Between Super Nintendo World and the Super Mario Brothers movie, Nintendo is doing more than ever to expand awareness of popular characters like Mario, and they're not alone either. The success of The Last of Us and HBO is putting PlayStation's characters in front of viewers who would never dream of playing video games. This is far from the first time games have been adapted into movies, televisions, or special events, but they've never been so well done or mainstream as they are now, with the result being that The Last of Us on HBO has driven a 230% rise in the game sales in the UK. These projects have an air of prestige that have been missing from previous efforts. For better or worse, even the Mario movie has attracted attention thanks to its stable of high-profile stars, which is the only thing nice thing I will be saying about Chris Pratt's casting. Either way, video game adaptations seem to be having a moment, and Super Nintendo World is kind of a piece of that. With all the excitement over new technologies and business models, it feels like both Sony and Nintendo have realized the real blue ocean is to simply put beloved characters in different mediums, but developed with the same care and attention that made those characters so popular in the first place. And from what I can see, seems to be working.
Thank you, Kat. Now we take this to the discussion table. I think you might be onto something there. Do you think that the days of bad video game adaptations are behind us? Do you think there's too much at stake now?
I mean, even Sony went and made a pretty bad Uncharted movie that still did well.
Yeah. You can make like, if the answer is we're going to get more video game movies, if they make 100 video game movies, at least half of those are going to be bad.
I think the thing is, putting characters, beloved characters in different mediums works. Hollywood is really hungry for content. People are really hungry to engage with these characters that they know and love from video games. You have to do them well. And for so long, these characters were kind of treated badly, even Nintendo characters.
Yeah.
I mean, think back to the early 90s when Nintendo was like, go make a movie.
Show.
And the result was a very bad sorry, folks, the Super Mario Super Show was not good. Sorry,
no, it wasn't.
Captain Lou Albano.
What?
R.I.P.
I think it dovetails nicely into sort of the idea that when you hop on like earnings calls for all these big like streaming companies and video game companies, the thing that everybody is talking about is in games, you're not just competing with other games for your viewers' attention. You're competing with movies. You're competing with TV. You're competing with all the other things, all the other entertainment things that people do every single day. And like Netflix is saying that too. Netflix is saying we're not competing with like Hulu or Disney or whatever. We're competing with video games and Fortnite and, you know, other things that people go out and do. And so I think it's almost an answer to that. It's like, okay, well, if games are not just competing with games, then why don't we go out there and properly compete with all these other forms of entertainment? And that, you know, can mean things like movies, that can mean things like good TV, that can mean things like physical experiences like this Super Nintendo World. So yeah, it certainly feels like a relevant train of thought that is going on in a lot of executives' heads right now that might result in us seeing even more different kinds of experiences that are still tethered to video games.
Yeah. When this generation started, my first thought was, wow, Xbox is really onto something with subscription models and cloud-based gaming and everything. And I think that stuff can still work out really well in terms of kind of breaking down the barriers between consoles and getting a lot of people playing games and everything. I think they're onto something. But I think Sony and Nintendo have both wisely realized that they have these incredibly recognizable characters, and that has so much currency in this world where people are very character focused. I'm thinking in terms of the MCU and whatnot. And Sony has been like, well, we have Sony Pictures, we have a relationship with HBO, let's go and try and make a prestige TV show. And it's worked, and it's driven so much attention and awareness to Sony's games. And Nintendo is saying, why don't we have an amusement park? We should go make an amusement park. And what's more, when they're making the Super Mario movie, it's not a throwaway. It looks genuinely good.
It does.
And it's had
surprisingly good.
It looks surprisingly good. I mean, I do think that real voice actors should probably be voicing these characters. But I don't think you can deny that if you just take a look at social media every time a new Super Mario Brothers movie trailer drops, it kind of dominates the conversation in a way that's shocking for an animated movie like this.
I agree with pretty much everything that you said, Kat. That's my Seth.
I also think that I feel like movies aren't good for video games in general, because I think about The Last of Us and I think about how that was famously announced to be a movie like a year after the game came out. And then cut to 2023, we have the pilot episode of The Last of Us, which is universally loved, absolutely incredible. and that was an hour and a half. That was a movie. I can't imagine fitting the whole story. I mean, we talk about the Uncharted movie. That movie has like five different plot points from five different games, all mashed up into one. Probably thinking that maybe they won't ever make another one. I'm sure they will, but like it's all PlayStation Productions doing that stuff. That it's like, oh, shows are the way to go. Like taking the time with the characters, and like obviously something with Mario, you don't need like a 10, you know, episode prestige drama on Mushroom Kingdom. Although actually that sounds really good. Actually, now that I'm saying it out loud. But it's so fun, like even seeing like that old footage of the Mario show, like, and then there's like the Mario movie with, you know, John Leguizamo as Luigi. and it's very like, it's very really cool that we're like living in this time that we have a Mario movie coming out in like 3 months. Like what a treat. Like we'll have that forever. And how has that not happened sooner? Like it was the same thing with like, you know, I was just so excited when that trailer came out with the Mario Kart level. It's like, I want to play Mario Kart. I want to jump back into 3D All-Stars. I'm gonna finally start Super Mario Sunshine on my Nintendo Switch. Like, it's really fun. And if we don't see that Rainbow Road level from the movie in the booster pass, I will be going to Nintendo headquarters and asking politely.
For those watching or not watching, we're seeing some clips of the amazingly bad Super Mario Brothers movie from whenever. It's forgettable. I don't even care. It's awful. But Kat, you were going to say?
To be clear, I don't think this is a silver bullet, because last year Xbox made a Halo TV show and put a lot of money behind it, and it had a Super Bowl commercial, and it drove a lot of interest. It was also extremely bad and very forgettable, and the only thing that anybody came out of it remembering was that Master Chief had sex. That was what they remembered.
Oh, yeah.
So you got to do it well, to be clear. Otherwise, people are just going to discard it, and it might actively hurt whatever you're trying to promote. But done really well, I think that it gets people to take video games seriously in a way that, frankly, people go, like, we're all kind of rolling our eyes at the discourse of, have video games finally grown up? But it does get people to take them seriously in a way that maybe they wouldn't have before. People are weird about video games. I don't really understand it, but
I do wonder sort of what the extension of that is, though. So we're talking a lot about TV and movies, but you also brought in the theme park into this. And that's, I agree that that is roped into the same conversation. And I also wonder, like, what else that could mean. Nintendo is loves to talk about their DNA as not a video game maker, but a toy maker, fundamentally a company that is about making fun experiences that people will use to play. They like play. So what are the other extensions of that? I don't know. I don't have a good answer. I remember a couple, maybe last year, there was a nature park in Japan that hid a bunch of little Pokemon statuettes all over their park for like 2 months. And you could go on these nature walks and take photos of Pokemon in the wild. And it was a really cool concept. And it didn't take off outside of Japan. I mean, it was just like a little local thing. But I wonder what other kinds of experiences Nintendo might be. You know, they make weird things. They make things like Labo. They make things... Labo? Labo? I've never had to say that out loud. I've never had to say it out loud before. they make all these other kinds of experiences. That little Mario Kart thing that you could drive around your living room, ring fit.
Yeah, those are all still the home circuit.
Are all still video game adjacent. But then, okay, so what is sort of the natural follow through of Nintendo as a toy maker trying to branch out into other forms of entertainment and experience with its beloved characters? And I'm curious to see that.
Yeah, I think the future is going to be pretty awesome now that people are seeing that you can get results by caring a little bit about the source material and treating it with respect. And I, for one, look forward to The Last of Us theme park. That's going to be a real treat.
Yeah, Rob. And I think you've really hit on something with the Pokemon comparison, because I've said that Pokemon is less a video game these days than a lifestyle brand.
Yes.
And when you're interacting with Pokemon, you're going to the stores, you don't really see the games anywhere. You see a lot of merch, you see a lot of good food, and you feel like these characters are almost real in so many ways. They're permeating your world. And Nintendo has done such a great job of making its characters feel accessible and for everyone that I could absolutely see that working with Mario or Zelda or mm-hmm. it's Splatoon even. I don't know. Ooh. Laser tag is just make a paintball range, but it's Splatoon.
I would love that. But you know why that happened? Fun. I mean, Pokemon has been a lifestyle brand since the anime basically came out, but yeah. It was kind of flagging a little bit, and then Pokemon Go happened. And again, Pokemon Go is a video game, mm-hmm. but it was a completely new kind of experience. Like they had Ingress, but Ingress was a very small community. Nobody had played anything like Pokemon Go before, for the most part. And it was an experience that took people out in the world doing things with other people, with their communities. And now people organize Pokemon Go Day events where everyone gets together and yeah. they eat snacks and they hike and they do all these things together. But it's all tied back to this franchise with these characters and these Pokemon. And so, it's like infinite fertile ground to be dug up here.
Yeah, I think the upshot is that... game companies have been trying to think for almost 20 years now, how do we break out beyond the core gaming audience? Yes. And everybody's asking this question, down to the fact that Netflix is trying to come up with new control schemes because people are so weirdly allergic to controllers.
Yep.
And this is like, I think, one piece of the puzzle, coming up with amusement parks, prestige TV and everything, having people interact with these characters in new ways that make them consider video games not as this thing that's over here, but as the incredibly vast entertainment landscape that it actually is.
Yeah.
This year, I decided I actually wanted to like follow hockey a little bit more than just the most casual of casuals. So I subscribed to a service that streams all of the NHL to your television. The Boston Bruins home opener, I went to watch it, and boom, blackout restrictions apply, which I thought was kind of ridiculous because I'm still 200 miles away from Boston, but whatever. Had I had NordVPN, that wouldn't have been a problem. I would have just gone in, changed my settings to another geographic area, and boom, I could have been watching all the Boston Bruins home games like it was nothing at all. So now I have NordVPN, and I can watch the home games of my local teams streaming without being frustrated. It's the same thing with like Netflix. It has all these complicated licensing rules, which from one country to another don't really make sense. So something you could watch on South Korean Netflix, you won't be able to watch on the United States Netflix unless NordVPN, boom, switch to South Korea, and you're watching whatever Korean drama that you want. I highly recommend you do that. I haven't done it myself, but people seem to enjoy them. And who am I to try to bring down people's enjoyment? NordVPN, more than just entertainment and sports availability, it's going to protect you, especially when you're traveling, when you're using public Wi-Fi. People are trying to get in there. They're creeping on you. Bad actors, people trying to steal your password, your bank account details. Who knows what the government's doing these days? I can't keep track. They're all over the damn place. NordVPN. It's going to protect you. It's going to protect up to 6 devices, because I know you have at least that many devices in front of you right now that can hook up to the internet. Boom. Fastest VPN in the world. You're not going to get any buffering. You're not going to get any lagging. It's going to stop your ISP from bandwidth throttling, which they do. That's kind of sneaky, especially how much you're paying those guys. There's threat protection to protect you from viruses and malicious malware and whatever else. Unsavory actors are out there. If you want to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. That's nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. Victor Charlie. That link is also going to give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There is no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nice of them, and I appreciate that.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this: talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
It's very cool. I am looking forward to what the future holds. But we've talked about games turning into movies. Now we're going to talk about a movie that turned into a game. Nintendo announced yesterday that GoldenEye is coming to
That's Nintendo a great Switch segue.
Online.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
That was good, Seth. Well done.
Thank you. Man, I was really struggling on that one. I had to take some notes so I didn't forget it.
Did that movie start the trend of Sean Bean dying?
I don't know.
Maybe. I have to look into this. We have to do a deep dive research and report on this. Yeah.
The GoldenEye for N64, of course. So, yes, it's coming out. It should be out by the time you're hearing this or soon after. This game meant a lot to a lot of people. However, some people have never played it, like Reb, and we're not going to hold that against her. Not today on her birthday, of all things.
No.
Yeah, it's coming. It's got online multiplayer, so you can relive all the fun without having to leave your house or invite your friends over. It's going to be a lot better to play online multiplayer on a modern 65-inch screen than it was to be in like somebody's dorm room on a 19-inch screen. But it's very exciting. And I wanted real quick, we took a poll on the NBC Twitter to ask about something that, and this, the results of this really surprised me, if I'm being honest. Screen peeking, everyone has their opinion on screen peeking, and they all say that it's cheating and it's awful. And I've seen countless stories of inventive ways where people would prevent one another from screen peeking, whether it's some concoction where they take cardboard boxes and slice them up and make the TV into four quadrants. But here are the results of the poll. Of course, the choices were screen peeking is criminal, no biggie, or all's fair in GoldenEye. Overwhelmingly, 66.2% said all's fair in GoldenEye. 8.9% said no biggie, and 24.8% said that it is a criminal act, which I find very surprising because I thought people were more against screen peeking. However, I also feel empowered to admit, like, yeah, of course I screen peek. That's part of the game. There's nothing stopping somebody who's playing against you to do the same. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a viable strategy.
It's a legitimate strategy.
Kat, what do you feel about GoldenEye? How do you feel about screen peeking? I'm curious to know.
All's fair in love and GoldenEye. I'm gonna totally screen peek because you're probably setting up proximity mines. You're gonna kill me and I'm gonna be very sad, but I have a lot of love for GoldenEye. I played it when it first came out back in 1997. I was in middle school, so it was kind of the absolute perfect time to get invested into the series. I had never watched a James Bond movie, not really. So that was the first time that I actually cared about James Bond. Got me to watch GoldenEye. I liked the game better than the movie, if I'm being totally honest.
I think everybody would agree with that.
We tend to think of GoldenEye in a certain way these days. We think of it as a little bit dated, I think. But at the time, it was really mind-blowing because first-person shooters on consoles, outside of some pretty bad ports of Doom and Wolfenstein, just really weren't much of a thing. And we were all still trying to kind of penetrate that and figure out what would a first-person shooter look like taken away from the mouse and keyboard setup. And GoldenEye was the beginning of that. And we quickly realized, wow, like four-player, first-person shooter in facility with so many different gadgets and silly characters and options. There were so many options in this game.
Yeah.
Made it a phenomenal party game, even though we were playing it at like 5 FPS and everything. You were still cackling when you got them with the remote bombs. You were still cackling when you caught them in the pyramid and shot them from above when they were running along in the little window and everything.
So satisfying.
The level design, like at the top end, GoldenEye had some excellent levels. Facility is one that definitely comes to mind. And the single-player campaign, like, I think a lot of people have forgotten about it, but I think it's extremely well done. A lot of great challenges, very faithful to the movie, and killer soundtrack, too. Sadly, it sounds like the Nintendo Switch version, certain sound effects are missing, like, people were observing that and that kind of thing. So it's not a perfect port, it's not a perfect adaptation, but I think we've been waiting for a long time to kind of be able to go back to this very early day of console FPS.
Yeah, I am looking forward to it. Jeffrey, do you have any history with GoldenEye on the Nintendo 64?
So I kind of started sweating when you guys were like, let's not make fun of Rev for never playing it.
No!
But I have a big but here, is that I have a great memory and history of playing GoldenEye 007 for Nintendo Wii.
Oh.
The 2010 video game. So that game came out when I was in college, and it has Daniel Craig's likeness in the game, but it is like a remake. It's a remake of that 1997 N64 game. So I only played that, and I loved it. Yeah, it was only on the Wii, and it had, you know, Daniel Craig's like voice and likeness and everything, and it was, you know, it was first person. It had the multiplayer. It had it online, which for at the Wii, I feel like was such a big thing, like all regularly playing it, you know, like was that like three, four years after it came out, and it was so fun. I was like blown away, and I never got a chance to play the N64 version, so I'm excited to kind of, obviously, you know, it's widely loved, and I'm, you know, probably gonna always prefer the Nintendo Wii version from 2010 sure. because that's just what I grew up with. It was very good. It had like, there was like club scenes, the music was good, like the voice acting, it just felt like I was actually playing a movie, and it was great. I have great memories of playing that multiplayer in college with my roommate, and I would never scream peek. I'm shocked at the results of the poll. I know your eyes will wander. You mm-hmm. might look for a second. There might be a quick like double take using only your pupils, but I try not to, and I don't know why. I feel guilty doing it. I feel
no,
like
don't embrace it.
It's just like okay, I know where you are, but then I see it by accident, and then I tell myself, I didn't see it. I'm not going there. I'm going to go this way because I didn't know they were there. And
you would make a terrible James Bond.
What I'm learning is that who on the NVC podcast has an ethical code? And Jeffrey is a moral and upstanding podcast host. I applaud you, Jeffrey.
Yeah. I screen peeked in the multiplayer in Donkey Kong 64. I have no regrets.
Oh, my. Reb. With the peanut gun?
With the peanut gun that can fire its first. If he shoots you, it's going to hurt.
The ultimate betrayal.
Wait, that was the coconut gun. Crap. Sorry. Sorry, everybody. I'm sorry, Ninfriendos. I got it wrong.
Somebody in the comments right now, I thought Reb was a professional, and she said the wrong kind of fruit gun.
I want every comment to be like, I thought Reb was a professional. Just that's the only comment.
Now they're going to do that because you said that.
Jeffrey. Happy birthday, by the way.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Go back to doing the nice comment thing that everyone's been doing for a few weeks. I like that better.
Nice comment.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there. I know there's a game that I have on my eShop wish list that the whole point of the game is to screen peek. I'm like blanking on the game's name. It's probably called Screen Peek. But every everyone is invisible in the game, and you have to fight people, but only by screen peeking.
That sounds so cool.
Yeah, it's like a $5-$10 eShop game, and I've been meaning to play, but you know, I don't have any friends. Anyway, so I think it's only co-op or local co-op. I don't know. I feel, man, now I'm thinking like, what if we had played like, all right, we're gonna screen peek. Like we had set the parameters. Maybe that's a fun way. Maybe I can live
like
with
an Uno house rule.
Yeah, we just never. Yeah, we never like. It was never. It was unspoken. Like we all knew. Everybody was doing it. It's, you know, it's like you really have no choice. If your competition is doing something to give them an edge and you're not, you're going to lose. Even if that might be a little bit morally questionable. But I sort of would go through the same process as you would, where I would see and I'd be like, no, I can't look. But then this little red suited gentleman with a forked tail would appear and be like, it's okay. If you screen peek, you'll get the kill. Like, you're right, Satan.
Evil
Thank
Seth.
You.
Evil Seth.
Yeah, it was Evil
Is
Seth.
Is Evil I'm Seth a character on NBC now?
Evil Seth, Photoshop,
ready
challenge.
Go.
Wouldn't Maybe it the be Lucifer Wa-Seth? Figure?
What's that?
Would your evil be called Wa-Seth? Maybe.
Yes, exactly.
An up down upside down S.
I'm enjoying the Seth extended universe of Wa-Seth, Seth, and what was it last week? Steph?
Saw Peach.
Just keep making more Seths.
Reb, for your birthday, do you have any plans to maybe play GoldenEye for the first time?
No, I have no plans to do such a thing. Thank you.
Oh no, Reb.
Next question.
We gotta play at least once. I need to run around as Odd Job and be like, boop, boop, boop.
Oh my god, we discovered that on accident. My friend just he picked Jaws. the tallest, biggest character, and I picked Oddjob, and like he was getting so furious, and we didn't
Jaws
know
is
that
such
that
a
was
big target.
Yeah, and you just run up, and you cannot kill Oddjob because he's when you're Jaws because he's so little. It's just impossible. This you can't look down enough. And so I would just run up to him, and just man, I think he's still mad at me.
The cool thing about GoldenEye is that it had a secret level, the Moonraker level, and it had lasers. And I didn't know anything about James Bond, so I'm like, Moonraker, that sounds rad. And then I actually watched it, and I was like, this is really bad, actually. the space shuttle scene goes on forever, but it is kind of funny watching Roger Moore flying around in the space shuttle, which was brand new in the 1970s with lasers shooting things down. Jeffrey raised an interesting point about the lineage of GoldenEye. After GoldenEye came out on the N64, there were so many attempts to capture the magic that you can never get back of GoldenEye in the N64, and the 2010 version was definitely one such experience. And it was interesting watching footage from what I assume was that game, because it looked more like a modern shooter. It was more Call of Duty-ish. There were like takedowns. Like GoldenEye was like had the connection to the earliest days of deathmatch, but greatly expanded. And it just has a vibe and a flavor that is, I think now people are just now starting to appreciate on its own terms.
Yeah.
The thing is, so my understanding is that the Xbox version and the Switch version are very different. So
that is correct.
The Xbox version, I think, is more enhanced, and the Switch version is the one that has local multiplayer.
Right.
Yeah. It's too bad that they couldn't have one-to-one like features that I have to choose between my children.
Well, now it's like, do I want to play GoldenEye in 4K? I mean, who doesn't want to see all 8 polygons of each character with their face just texture mapped on there in the weirdest possible way? Yeah. I'm going to be playing it on Switch. I would feel weird not playing it on Switch. And plus, I have the N64 controller, which is a must-have. You need exactly yes thank you you need the jank. I have a copy of it somewhere for my N64. I think I might have like loaned it to my neighbor, but like I did try to play it at PAX East in the console room a few years ago with my kids, and they didn't like it at all, and I was like, ooh,
it's definitely a nostalgia thing.
We've come so far in terms of console first-person shooters that, like you said, Kat, like that wasn't really a thing that existed, and when it did exist, it wasn't very good. In fact, we didn't even have the term first-person shooter back then. They were Doom clones.
Even a couple years later, Rare made Perfect Dark, which is in so many ways similar to GoldenEye, a vastly expanded GoldenEye, but it didn't land quite as hard despite being a very good game, admittedly. And then Halo came out, and that really did change everything, and we were really
me and my neighbor Chris playing some Blood Gulch for 5 hours.
What I'm asking is that NVC stream a GoldenEye tournament.
Okay.
Whoa.
And I like we need to have lot. Like some kind of bet or a prize or something.
I bet that I lose.
I bet that Kat
this game
wins.
Is random enough that you might do better than you think, especially if we turn on Man with the Golden Gun and do the one shot thing.
Yeah,
I don't know what any of this.
Just
like
hide
this.
In the bathroom.
And then they'll know where I am because you told me to hide there.
I love this idea, and I think we should hash out the details, and we should absolutely like stream this. And I think this will be super
and Reb
awesome.
Can be Oddjob,
and Reb can be Oddjob. We will lift the rules. The Oddjob is a playable character.
I'm making myself sound like I'm really good at this game. I was always the absolute worst among my friends.
I always thought I was really good, but then I met a guy who was like, he's like, oh yeah, when I was in college, I won like all the GoldenEye tournaments. And I was like, okay, college boy. But no, it turned out he was like unbelievably good at playing GoldenEye to the point where I just didn't want to play with him anymore. It just sucked. You just kill me constantly. So well, that should be out now. If you have the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pass, and everyone will be playing it and we'll be having fun. And then we're going to stream it. I love that idea. We're going to have to set that up. We're going to stream it, the four of us, noobs. All right, we'll figure out which team has like noobs and which team has the people who
I mean, I haven't played this game in 20 years, so I'm basically a noob.
yeah, exactly. But I think it'll come back to you. Once, like, I'll be like, oh yeah, the P90, that was like the really good gun that you wanted to get. So
I love the silencer. Very good, yes.
Oh my, I can still hear. Choo, choo. Oh, so good. Okay.
You hear a silencer.
Because it's
silent, Reb.
It's just a funny sentence.
It is kind of funny.
It's just a funny sentence.
Actually, all right. It's time to move on to the Miiverse. We have everyone's just joining us in Mii Plaza. This is where we just kind of talk about what we want to talk about. Reb, you had an ugly cry.
I had a really big ugly cry a couple days ago.
Wow. Tell me about this. I want to hear more.
I played a game called A Space for the Unbound. I have a column on IGN.com where I write about indie games, and I was playing it for that column, and sort of the premise of the column is that I usually only play a couple hours because there's a lot of games, and then I do a little interview, and I played the first couple hours and I could not put this thing down. A Space for the Unbound is a slice of life adventure game. If you liked either the anime movies Your Name or Weathering With You, this is extremely your jam. It is about a young man named Atma who is about ready to graduate high school, kind of on the cusp of like future planning and figuring out who he wants to be. And his girlfriend Raya is in the same boat with him. And both of them start to come down with a case of magical powers. Raya can do physical like matter manipulation kind of thing. It's never like fully explained exactly the rules of her power. But Atma has this ability called Space Dive, where he can dive into people's subconscious and like help them sort of work through their problems and their issues. And I don't want to say too much more than that, because that's how this game starts, but that is not what this game is about. The thing that hooked me so completely on A Space for the Unbound, aside from its gorgeous pixel art, is the fact that you figure out pretty quickly that there's something else going on here. Something's not right. Something's kind of off. There's like a dream sequence in the prologue that doesn't match up with what's going on in the rest of Atma's day-to-day life. He keeps having these weird flashbacks. Something's off with Raya's powers. And the game takes its time getting to actually explaining what this thing is, but it keeps feeding you these little tidbits and none of them add up until the very end when it all comes together. And so it's just this really intriguing mystery where you don't know what the mystery actually is. And Ooh. It is an incredibly emotional, incredibly like written, beautifully written, and also visually beautiful ending in terms of like what they do with the pixel art. The ending sequence in total from like, I can't really explain what it is, but like the whole ending section is about an hour long. It's probably like roughly a 10-hour game. I was just sitting there bawling my eyes out, just disgustingly the whole time, because it was just it got me so hard and it just kept hitting and hitting. And then kind of the other thing about it is that as all this is going on, like while it's taking its time getting to this mystery, you're also exploring this rural 90s Indonesian town, and it is just this really, I do not have a lot of insight into Indonesian culture, and being able to explore this like interesting slice of life in a place I had never really experienced was really wonderful, because all the characters are very grounded. They have their own like everyday problems and emotions, and you're interacting with these very human people, but also you're surrounded by a lot of things that are very unfamiliar but wonderful. And so, yeah, this game blew me away. I was not expecting it. I have not gone from, oh, this looks neat, to I cannot stop playing this so fast in a really long time. So check out A Space for the Unbound. It's on the Switch.
Is it new?
Yeah, it came out last month.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I think.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know offhand the studio who made this game?
Mojigan? I want to get it. I really want to get this right.
Because I feel like I've seen like another game that when you said Indonesia,
you might have, yes.
Reminds me a little bit of a pixel art Life is Strange. Like that's my first thing that popped into my head.
Yes, oh, okay. Mojigan Studios. It's an Indonesian developer. They did When the Past Was Around, which came out in 2020. You might be familiar with that. It's been seen places, and they also did a game called She and the Lightbearer.
Cool. I like that name.
Yeah, I do too.
Awesome. And that is Space for the Unbound. So if you want to ugly cry,
oh, yeah,
the eShop, and you know, it's 10 hours of excitement and then just bawling.
Oh, yeah.
For an hour. I like that. That's 10% emotional damage. Awesome. Jeffrey, have you been playing anything exciting, anything on your mind that you'd like to discuss during the Miiverse?
I'm looking up a Space for the Unbound on the eShop, and it's $20, and I want to leave the podcast and go download it right now.
I mean, you can
do.
You know
we
how
do.
Many times we've downloaded games during the podcast because somebody
yeah, Pear will start like, doing that a lot. Yeah,
Pear will do it. Brian does it. I do it. I'll be like, oh, as soon as I'm done, and then I will go and I'll just download whatever.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm not gonna go and do that myself. So
really good.
Yeah.
It's wow. Yeah. This looks so good. Just the art, the backgrounds, like it just. I forgot it was pixel art just because it was so yeah. immersive. And I love pixel art. It's not a bad thing. I was just like, wow, this is like, looks really amazing. It's funny because like, it's funny. I'm so excited for the Mario movie that I regularly rewatch the trailer because I just love, I love the first trailer with the penguins.
Adorable.
I look,
good trailer.
I know. Okay, look, it sounds, maybe that sounds weird, but like it you guys have to weird. Understand that is mostly my job on Social Team is trailer kind of, breakdowns and rewinds and you know stuff like Kat, we're sort of like really excited when trailer drops. That's kind of our bread and butter for Social, and I will just watch it probably 100 times. I could probably just just recite the whole trailer, and every time I watch that trailer I immediately jump into the N64 app on Switch. The app, the game.
Aww.
The N64,
yeah, it's an app.
Yeah
it's an app,
it's an
yeah.
application.
Yeah,
executable.
Yeah, I love because I feel like on Switch, it's like, oh, Jeffrey's online playing Nintendo 64 Switch Online. And then I like that it says underneath it, like, what you're playing so that people know that, like, yeah, I am playing Super Mario 64. And then because I, you know, played Majora's Mask and I was too scared. And so I went back to Super Mario 64.
Oh.
But,
is there something else I can help with?
Oh my gosh, my Siri just, that scared me more than Majora's Mask. I don't know what triggered that. But it's just been kind of like where I feel like I'm in between. I truly have just like lately just been playing like the kind of online service on my Switch, like Fortnite Rocket League, because you just got it. It's so fun to play in bed versus, you know, at your desk or whatever. Right. But sometimes I find myself in between where I'm just like, I'm going to like jump back into the N64 app and just pick a random game. And I was playing through Pokemon Puzzle League, which
yeah.
is like,
yeah.
you know, it's just a silly little kind of bejeweled kind of puzzle Tetris, not Tetris, but you know, it's very kind of a very simple, straightforward game that I remember blew me away as a kid. That I remember at Blockbuster, I'd be like, oh my God, Pokemon Puzzle League, that sounds amazing. And then I play it now and it's fun, but I was like, wow, this is pretty much like nothing. like
is,
in
yeah.
terms of like, yeah, it is just like, yeah, in this footage, Professor Oak's like, Ash, you're late for the Pokemon Puzzle League. And then that is just the menu screen and you just immediately like fight like Gary, and you're just
as far as I'm concerned,
they did
that's all
the original footage with the voice actors from the original anime release. That's cool, I have
that
to
is,
say.
Yeah,
for a freaking puzzle game, they really blew this thing
for
out.
For an N64 game, yeah.
Yeah, they had mini games too. It's crazy. Look at this art too.
I do love
it's very fun. The music is good. Like the sound effects are kind of like very ASMR style. Like it's a really fun nighttime game to just like mindlessly play on my Switch.
Kat, you and I have been playing the same game.
We have. So I've been playing Fire Emblem Engage. It's been a little bit of slow going because I'm playing on hard, which is not to say that it's like impossible or anything, especially because I'm playing on casual, but the levels are taking a little bit of time to like actually grind through, and I even though I'm playing on casual, I'm still a little bit allergic to losing characters, so I get annoyed when it actually happens. I'm really enjoying it. I think that it might actually end up being the most underrated Nintendo release this year. It's not getting a ton of traction on social media. I think the sales are not going to match up to Three Houses, like even a little bit. Most of the discourse has been hardcore fans complaining on social media, and frankly, they need to chill out. And I have been just really enjoying the tactics elements of Fire Emblem Engage. I was like, this is what I was missing from Three Houses. I dig this. I love the look and the feel of the game. I am in love with the actual emblem system. I think it's really clever and actually fairly sophisticated in the way that it handles skills and everything. It's neat, Seth. I like this game. I'm going to keep playing it.
Yeah, I surprised myself when I looked at my playtime and it was at 7.5 hours. I was like,
wow.
7.5 hours?
It got That's you.
Like, it's kind of like when I'm not playing it, I'm thinking about playing it. I actually stopped playing Chained Echoes because this game sort of pulled me in. And like you, I wish I had played more, and it's not because I'm on hard mode. It's just because I have a scattershot sort of brain that wants to make me do a lot of things.
I mean, Hi-Fi Rush just came out, and I want to go play that now, too. So.
I never even heard of that until yesterday.
It's because it literally came out yesterday.
Right, yeah. And now everyone's like saying how amazing it is. But yeah, I'm enjoying Fire Emblem Engage a lot. I didn't like Three Houses much, and I don't really have an explanation why. I always thought it was because I just don't like strategy RPGs. But something in like early on, probably like the first hour, it just clicked with me. And I was like, oh, you know what? Instead of just throwing my people into like battle and having them all die and have to rewind time, maybe if I stopped and thought a little bit ahead of time, and this
You're
is good advice
for the code, Seth, you're figuring out tactics games. I'm so proud of you.
This is good advice for life as well. Like actually make a little bit of
maybe
a plan before you
think about this.
Yeah. I think with, turn-based RPGs like Final Fantasy, I think there's a little bit less of that planning. It's a little bit, for me personally, it's like, oh, I'm just gonna, you know, this guy's gonna use a sword and then this person's gonna, you know, punch, and then this person's gonna use a potion. But with this, you know, you have to consider where you are and what your range is, and I'm like, oh, it's just a board game. It's like a really fun, complicated board game with like beautiful anime people in it and horses that have wings, and I love and I really love it, and it looks so good. Like the colors are bold and bright and amazing, and I really like Fire Emblem Engage, and I guess now that I dip my toes into checking things online, and people are like, this game sucks and it's not for me, and they really blew it this time, and Fire Emblem's never gonna recover.
It's a very vocal minority, and I think we always have to be a little bit careful about what people are saying on social media about, oh, I don't know, the localization of Fire Emblem Engage. But I think that, unfortunately, it reinforces to me a little bit that Three Houses, its profile was raised by the fact that people were memeing those characters so aggressively.
Yep. Yes.
And this game is just not drawing memes.
No.
In the same way. Memes have power in the video game space. And Three Houses was, I think, probably the most memed game of 2019 or whatever it came
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely.
Whatever it came out in 2019, but you might be right. My fiance is playing it, and every time I glance over at his TV, that game looks beautiful. It is so, you're right Amazing, about it being very colorful. It is so nice to look at. Looking at those characters, I'm just kind of like, yeah, they're fine, mostly.
They're very anime, you know, standard anime characters.
They're fine. Whereas Three Houses, I feel like, had a lot more draw.
A lot more personality.
Yeah.
I think the thing is that you got these cardboard cutouts who are running around. They look cool, but... Yeah. It makes me, I think I compared it to, on X the Blood God, I think I compared it to like a magical girl, like Sailor Moon, Sentai kind of stuff, where they're transforming. And that, I think the transformation stuff is a lot of fun.
Whenever I see them have conversations, again, I'm not playing this, I'm just looking over, but I keep glancing over and I see them having conversations, and the conversations are like, wow, I really like doing push-ups. Hi, it's nice to meet you.
You look so shiny when you sweat.
And that, and that's the conversation.
The
right?
story is not anything.
Yeah. So
I'm going to say, I think that's what I like about it. There's like 5 minutes of you talking nonsense, and then you adopt a cat, and then you're back on the battles again. Like, how, that's exactly what I want. I just want to play.
The cat's great.
I agree. Yeah,
there's a lot of cats to adopt. There's pigeons to adopt. I mean.
Oh, there's that little round guy, though, that follows you around.
Oh, yes.
And my fiance put a little top hat on it, and it just follows him around and, like, let these down. It's very cute. I like that guy.
Sunglasses on mine.
That's cool. Sunglasses are cool.
I'm with you, Seth. It was the kind of game. Well, last night I was just chilling in a beanbag chair with listening to a podcast and playing this game without any music. And when I can get into that place with the game, I'm kind of in my happy place.
Mm. Yeah. I like Fire Emblem Engage a lot. I think, I don't know, I was going to be like, and I think you should definitely check it out, but just because I like it doesn't mean you're going to like it. I don't know.
Seth, we can give recommendations, but...
Well, it's hard for me to recommend it based on, like, the fact... If somebody's on the fence because they really like Three Houses and they haven't picked this one up, then they're probably not going to
like it.
It's
a different flavor of Fire Emblem for sure.
Yeah, I don't have the Fire Emblem, like, depth of knowledge to be like, if you liked Fire Emblem Infinity Shoes, you're going to really like this one.
I do think it's interesting that so many people who wouldn't normally have picked up a Fire Emblem were drawn in by Three Houses, but you didn't care for Three Houses. You cared for this one, which I think has a lot more connections to classical Fire Emblem as I knew it back on like the GBA, that kind of thing with the weapons triangle and the design of the maps and everything. So,
yeah. I don't know why Fire Emblem was such a blind spot for me. I never played a
Fire Emblem. It's a tactics game, and tactics is a pretty niche genre. Speaking as somebody who's played a lot of tactics games and enjoys the genre.
It's got knights and dragons and spears and stuff. That's
and hex-based grids.
Hex-based grids. Yeah. See, all the things that I thought I liked, and now I guess I do. So, yeah, Fire Emblem Engage, please, if you're like me, check it out. If you wear a white sweatshirt that has KK Slider on it, you're going to like this game. All right, it's time to go on to the question block. This is not an edible question block. Sorry to get your hopes up.
Ooh.
Yeah, there's no cookies here.
I like Jeffrey's better.
I know. I like the fans' questions the most of all.
Oh, yeah.
That sounded insincere, but I do. I like getting these questions. True. And I actually hate trying to narrow them down because sometimes there'll be like five that are like,
You know what we should do? We should print out the questions. Print it on an edible sheet, put it on a cake, birthday cake for Reb, and eat it that way.
Wow, eating paper for my birthday. What a treat.
No, it's edible.
It's edible.
Yeah, we'll write the question block on a cake, and we will bake it for you. Peach.
Oh,
yeah. You. Reb, you've had an edible, like, picture on a cake, right?
Yeah.
You hesitated and spoke volumes.
The question, Seth.
Oh, the question is, this is from Matt Pearson, and this is a good question because I want to get everyone's opinion on this. How do you feel about the Nintendo Switch Online service and expansion pass up to this point? Are you satisfied with the service? Wait, hold on a second. I think Matt Pearson might work for Nintendo customer service. I think I got this survey.
Matt's gonna get us. Why is Nintendo Switch Online the best online service?
Have fun with friends and family. Are you satisfied with the service and the quality of the games that they offer? What about the pace of releases and special offers? And Matt also thanks us all for entertaining and informing them every week. Not a problem. Love to entertain and inform. Entertain and edutainment. So, real quickly, around the horn, what are your feelings about the Nintendo Switch Online service? Kat, how is it fitting your lifestyle, your busy cat lifestyle?
Yeah, I don't feel like I ever use it for the most part, but I feel like I have a little blind spot because I just have all of the subscriptions in general, so I don't have a great sense of what life is like without Nintendo Switch Online versus what life is like with it. I enjoy having N64 and Sega Genesis. I would probably own it just to be able to have access to those games on my Nintendo Switch. I'm very disappointed with Nintendo's cadence of releases. I think that the actual UI is quite poor. They introduced a different app that was meant to try and unify them, but it was so slow that I was like, I don't want to use this, actually. I don't think that they released these, the Mario Kart expansions and the Animal Crossing expansion, which is a nice idea. I think that's a nice perk, but they don't really come at a frequent enough clip, I think, to...
Yeah.
Kind of justify the price of Nintendo Switch Online. And if you're not into old games like I am and want them on the Nintendo Switch, like I totally understand why you wouldn't be into it. I don't think that Nintendo Switch Online has been particularly well thought out. And it's kind of your typical half-baked Nintendo online service, which is too bad.
Yeah. Reb, what are your thoughts and feelings on Nintendo Switch Online and the expansion pass?
I think I've said this on here before.
Say it again.
But I am in a group chat with a bunch of nerdy people, and 8 of us got together when this thing came out and all bought in. And so once a year I Venmo my friend, or PayPal or whatever, my friend $10 to keep the subscription up. And so it's really cheap for me. I pay $10 a year. So I mostly don't think about it, is kind of my answer. It's really nice to, I don't think I have the expansion pass. I don't even know what comes with the expansion pass.
Sega Genesis, and 64 and free DLC.
I didn't need it for the Mario Kart tracks, did I?
You can buy those.
Oh.
I mean, you can buy them. You just get them for free with the DLC.
With the part of the, with the expansion, it's part of
it. Okay, I actually don't know if I have the expansion pass or not, so
did you get
that.
The Animal Crossing expansion?
I did get the, I must have the expansion pass, because I did get
that. It's really telling that you're like, do I have the expansion
pass? I don't know. I pay a guy $10 and the
online
happens.
You have the Sega Genesis app on your Switch.
Why would I use that?
Sonic 2.
Why? There's other video games. Anyway, I don't think about it, and so... It's nice to have. Like, I played Splatoon a lot last year, and it was really nice to just open that up and play online and just not even think about it. I guess I must have it, because I did get the Mario Kart tracks and I didn't pay extra for them. So maybe I'm paying more than $10. I don't know what's going on.
Rev, you might want to look into this.
I should really check into this. But yeah, I have the Mario Kart tracks, and over the holidays I played with my siblings, and it was nice to just not even think about it. Just open up. It's like, oh, there they are. I must have downloaded them.
That's the thing. It's like not being able to play Splatoon, basically.
Yeah, that would have been a big problem.
That would be rough. Yeah. Or Pokemon is a big one that relies on it as well.
So presumably for how much I'm supposed to be paying every year, like it's a perfectly good deal, I guess, but I don't know, whenever I open up my Xbox, there's a bunch of Game Pass games in there, and it's like, hey, you got Game Pass, and I don't know, I feel like that's at least more visible in terms of what I'm getting for my questionable amount of money.
So all the platform holders charge for multiplayer, and in the year 2023 that feels weirdly retrograde to
me. It kind of does,
doesn't
it?
Feels
like absolutely does.
Old-fashioned idea, and I think that business models kind of need to be rethought a little bit for these particular platform holders.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that was like the big sort of the Xbox 360 versus PS3, and the PS3 fans would be like, well, we don't have to pay for our multiplayer. And then what did they do?
They introduced PS Plus, but then they introduced the free games, which was a big deal at the time.
Right. Which now is not at all, because everybody's got the free games if you pay for them. Jeffrey, what are your thoughts on the Nintendo Switch Online service?
I do just want to say really quickly to Reb that Nintendo employee Matt Pearson is not going to be happy about hearing you split the family membership with 8 other Amigos.
That's literally what
it's literally
for.
A plan.
You can have up to 8 people and it's $80 a year. That's what it's there for.
Oh my God. What if Matt Pearson's a Nintendo cop? And you just got busted?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
What is the family, really?
So, yeah, because I know the fine print is like has to be at the same address, blah, blah, but obviously no one ever follows
what
that.
What is a family but just a group chat?
Nintendo Nintendo supports chosen family through their family plan.
That's true. Correct. Thank you.
All right, I'm actually a Nintendo employee, and I have to
put it on. I don't think you're allowed to be on this podcast.
rip off my mask.
He disclosed it in the fine print, which nobody reads.
I know that I have Nintendo Switch Online Expansion Pass because I was upset that I had to pay like $50 more for it. But I split it with my sister, who we both live in the same home.
Of course.
So it's only $40. I'm gonna citizens arrest Reb on her birthday. I really wanted it for the N64. That was the biggest thing, to be able to play Ocarina of Time on the Switch. It was like worth the $50 extra, you know, $80 a year, whatever it is, instead of just like paying. Like, you can just buy it, but like I am technically always paying for it, but like I would have the online expansion pass anyway.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, everything's made up. Like, Nintendo has my money. It's fine.
Yeah. They have your money. Matt Pearson he's going to get a glowing report from his bosses at the Nintendo cop shop where he works. So that, unfortunately, is all the time that we have for this week's NVC. Before we go, I have a few favors to ask of you. If you're watching us on YouTube, please leave us a like and a nice comment. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, please leave us a review. It helps spread the good NVC word, and we will be forever in your debt. Special thanks to Red on the ones and twos. And most of all, thanks to you for hanging out with us. And remember, MVC is the only place where you can
get the thing.
Get the birthday thing.
Ooh.
Oh.
Hi, Ben.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.